This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison and Noel Lim. It's 7:07 a.m, Thursday the 10th of September, and in about 15 minutes we'll be speaking with Jeffrey Goh, Johor Committee Member of the SME Association of Malaysia, about how business in Johor has been faring since our borders closed earlier this year. But before that, we're taking a look at the markets.
Yeah, it looks like the US equities have rebounded after a three-day rout, with buyers seemingly pushing the tech-heavy Nasdaq 100 to its best day since April. Now we take a look at the actual numbers here. The S&P was up 2%, the Dow Jones up 1.6%, and the Nasdaq Composite was up 2.7%, seeing some recovery from the few days of red. And taking a look at the rest of the region, though, yesterday was a completely red day in Asia, at least the counters that the indexes that we're looking at. Malaysia was down 1.5% to 1,496 points below the 1,500 mark there. Singapore was down 0.2%, Hong Kong was down 0.6%, Shanghai was down 1.9%, both Japan and Korea were down just above 1%, and Australia was down 2%. Although gold is marginally in the green, it's at $1,948 per ounce, and oil though was up 2.5%, or is up 2.5%, at $40.79 per barrel. Taking a look at some of the most value, some of the biggest trades in the US, Tesla was up 11%, Apple was up 4%, Amazon up 4%, and Microsoft up 4.3% as well. Zoom saw a big recovery, 11% up.
All right, and for more insight into global markets, we're speaking this morning to Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank. Vishnu, thank you so much for joining us. Good morning. Now, US markets recovered last night, but volatility appears to be here to stay, with the VIX index hitting above 30 recently. What are markets so nervous about?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Well, I think this is something that, if you're trying to track the markets from a day-to-day basis, you only find out when you wake up what's really going what has happened. So that's my qualification on the insights. But I think the underlying structural issue or the much longer cyclical issues that can stick at this point appear to be more about US-China risks and the risks around the US presidential elections. I think those are the stickier ones. Even if we say, look, there's some good news, some bad news on vaccines, so on and so forth, or some reimposition of partial lockdowns, these things are really on a much shorter time frame. The underlying trend there is towards a vaccine and towards some form of recovery and alleviation of the COVID situation. So it's really falling back on geopolitical risks. And also, I think the other part of the equation is really how monetary policy will respond. Whether you're going to get a lot more extra stimulus that's going to be pushing markets up higher. So these are the things I think markets are actively thinking about as they assess the situation, because it becomes less clear. The initial emergency response is always the one that's quite unequivocal, but whereas after that, it becomes tougher. And I think one thing that may weigh on their minds is whether the U.S. fiscal response will be adequate and whether or not the Fed will do enough to compensate for that. And with that, we also have the dollar that moves. So the recovery in gold overnight is partly because of a weaker U.S. dollar as well.
Vishnu, how seriously should we take Trump's threats of decoupling the U.S. economy from China, and who really stands to lose the most?
I think, that's really an interesting question, because depending, and this is, a pure candor here, depending on which day you ask me that question, the answer could have been different. And I think here's the problem. The problem is we probably need to get back behind the intent of Trump saying that. I don't think Trump actually means what he says. What he wants is the optics of it and to show certain segments of it. So it's not as comprehensive a statement as we think it might be. So the example is, overnight there's been some optimism about how U.S. financial institutions are actually, entrenching themselves in China and trying to reestablish there. So I think this is where some of that nuance comes in. Where he wants to show decoupling is showing job creation and manufacturing and trade in the U.S. So I think in terms of bilateral trade, he wants to show more of a balance. However, if China is relaxing on its regulations, then at least the presence of U.S. institutions there means that a sweeping and a brutal restriction on capital movement in and out of China, particularly via the U.S. dollar channel, that is not going to be a heavy sanction on China just yet. So I think those are the points of relief at this time. But I don't think it's just an interpretation problem. I think Trump is also a moving target. And I think that remains the challenge for markets. It's not just about a static interpretation of what he's saying, but what he wants at a different point of time, depending on the circumstances.
And if we take a look across the pond from the US, Vishnu, there has been some news out of the UK with Boris Johnson apparently threatening to break international law over Brexit, which was slammed by members of his own party because there are concerns that this will damage the UK's global standing and invite mistrust from other countries. When you take a look at the situation from your vantage point, what kind of risks do you see here for the UK, particularly if they walk away without a EU-UK trade deal?
Right. I mean, that's really, something worth considering a bit more deeply about. One of the first takeaways here is it appears at this point of time, and I'm going to trip over my own words at some point, but at this point, it appears that he's really using that more of a bargaining chip. As you can tell, Trump's influence does go cross-Atlantic. So he's really using that more of as a bargaining chip rather than suggesting to the rest of the world that they're going to break deals that have been entered into. So that's the first point, which is showing an underlying intent to actually wanting a deal. The fact that you want bargaining chips means that you want a deal. So it's not entirely dire, the UK-EU situation. However, if and when that deal doesn't get done, then I think the UK could have bigger problems because you could have a fresh Scottish referendum and I think then the UK would have bigger problems rather than one of the perception of its integrity and its word.
And Vishnu, bringing it back home to Malaysia for us, the overnight policy rate is currently at 1.75%, and Bank Negara Malaysia thus far has cut rates after every policy meeting this year. What are your expectations for when they meet later today?
Our expectations are that Bank Negara Malaysia does not do anything at this point of time. It sounds like the most counterintuitive thing ever, especially after Q2 GDP, so on and so forth. But the thought behind that is, I think BNM wants to send across the message that they have actually moved preemptively, which is true. A lot of the policy moves were very preemptive. They were front-loaded. And also, I think the finer point here is twofold. One is BNM is putting across the message that, look, the economy has bottomed and they actually expect the economy to make back ground. And that's what they refer to when they say the negative output gap is closing. That means the economy is getting back towards where it should be. So they expect that motion to be set in motion already. So that's one thing. The second thing I think that they probably want to also put across is they want to look at more targeted stimulus. So providing cash where it's required and in a far more nuanced manner, rather than just headline rate cuts all the way. So I think that's the other message that's coming through, that BNM will be there to support, but it's on a very targeted basis. That being said, we still think rates can go lower. And I think it's a matter of timing and assessment of the situation rather than, show hand at this point of time.
Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning, Vishnu. That was Vishnu Varathan of Mizuho Bank in Singapore, of the opinion that BNM's going to stay pat this monetary policy meeting. Bank Negara does have a reputation for preemptive action, right? And at some point, you've got to sit back and give it time to take effect, the moves that you've already put in place.
Yes, you need to allow for the effects to trickle down. And also, having said that, I think we'll really feel the pain of the economy once the loan moratorium ends, and maybe the early next year we'll really see, we have a much clearer picture on where the economy is heading.
All right, and we're going to head into some messages now, and then up next we're going to be speaking with Jeffrey Goh, Johor Committee Member of the SME Association of Malaysia, on whether Johor can survive without business from Singaporeans. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.